It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we are going to have another great conversation today. Our guest is Professor Victor Davis Hanson. We'll be talking with him in segments 2, 3, and 4. And one of the major things we'll talk about is his book that was written back in 2018, The Case for Trump. So it promises to be a fascinating conversation. But before we get into all of that, wanted to say, first of all, thank you to producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for all the great work that you do. It's Friday. Steve, I know you're glad it's Friday.
Yes, another big sigh. It's over.
And thank you to you listeners there. You are treasured. You are valued. You have a purpose. And so go out there and do it. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and body. Strive for excellence. And if you want to reach out to me, you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. That's kim@kimmunson.com. I love hearing from you. And so as we jump in here, our quote for today, Steve, is from Professor Victor Davis Hanson. He'd written a very important book about World War II. And he said, behind every American soldier, dozens of their countrymen tonight sleep soundly, and hundreds more in their shadow abroad will wake up alive and safe. Takes my breath away.
There's so many things in American life that we tend to take for granted, and I'm afraid that's one of them, too, that the younger generations, they know a little bit about World War II, but in terms of the sacrifice and what it bought us, they don't get it.
That's why we have to keep talking about it. That is really, really important. And his book, in The Case for Trump, he talks about the elitism and then how they really look down on, you know, middle America, if you will. So there's this really, I would call it now, they call them the coastal elites. I have to add in the coastal and the Denver Boulder elites and how they really view everyday hardworking Americans. And this is from Dan Rather, this little funny. I thought this was kind of good. So let's see what you think of this. He said, an intellectual snob is someone who can listen to the William Tell Overture and not think of the Lone Ranger.
I hate to think of that. I, you know, Dan Rather could utter anything that I would find, you know, respectable, enjoyable, whatever, but that's good.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. So, okay, let's go ahead and jump into, you know, we started, Patty has been doing amazing research, and on Monday, we started doing a running total on corporate welfare that the state of Colorado has been giving out in enterprise zones. Because over on Proposition CC, where they're asking to keep our taxpayer bill of rights refunds, there's really two refunds that Coloradans can get on their tax form. There's that refund, and then there's another refund that we can get with the TABOR, the taxpayer bill of rights caps on revenue on how much the government can keep. And we give the state of Colorado growth of inflation plus population. Anything above that that Colorado has collected is money that should be returned back to the people. Proposition CC, there is big money coming in to get you to vote yes on Proposition CC, which would basically, you would give them permission to keep your taxpayer bill of rights refund forever. And so we're seeing all kinds of money coming in to try to get you to vote that way. But what Patty has uncovered is the amount of subsidies, tax incentives, credits, grants that big corporations are getting from the state of Colorado. And the question that comes up is, if Colorado is giving away or not, you know, not collecting these taxes and letting these people have a break on their taxes, and then they say we don't have enough money, it just doesn't match up to me, Steve.
And then your the other concern that you have is them picking favorites.
Picking winners and losers.
Yeah, winners and losers, yeah.
So our number here today, and we have our little disclaimer, is that please note that these companies that we're discussing are successful companies. And our point is that these companies do not need government money to maintain their success. We believe that the free market should stand alone without any government interference It's better to cut taxes across the board without any preferential treatment for chosen companies that allows the government to pick winners and losers. So, Steve, we started on Monday. We've had a running total of these different companies. And so today, if you need a reason to vote no on Proposition CC, we have hundreds of millions of reasons, all related to corporate welfare. If the state needs more money, why are tax incentives, credits, and grants given to corporations? According to Good Jobs First Colorado Tracker, the Colorado Office of Economic Development and International Trade through the Enterprise Zone program offered Black Hills Corp, a diversified energy company with a market cap of $4.61 billion, four separate tax credit incentive packages in years 2011 and 2012 in the amount of just under $16 million, and they accepted it. Adding this to our previous 4 days of packages this week, the grand total for offers accepted by corporations given subsidies by state agencies is $111,194,469. That goes a long way towards a budget.
Okay, I got to ask the question, though. Ultimately, you and I agree. We want the government out of this line of reasoning totally. Just let the system or the normal processes work. But I ask the question, what is the incentive? A quid pro quo is a phrase we've been hearing over and over again with the Trump-Ukraine thing. And a quid pro quo is simply something that one party puts up so that they can get something from the other party.
Well, and that's a really good question. Now, one of the things is when we had talked to Tom Kranowitter earlier in the week, that in fact, government, they hold all the cards right now on rules and regulations. As we've moved to the administrative state, it's kind of like you need to play ball, and because we hold the cards. And so, if in fact they then are giving money or tax breaks to one corporation, you talk about how they're really in bed together. Does that make sense, Steve? Am I making sense here?
Yes. Yes. Continue.
Okay. Now, another thing with economic development that they say is, well, this brings in all kinds of jobs, which stimulates the economy. Well, jobs do stimulate the economy. That is true. However, is it government's job to pick who comes in and who doesn't? And the other thing about it is you're seeing, and this is, again, a big public policy thing. We talk about our rural America, that they, the towns are dying. And, one of the reasons is because now you have these big population centers that are using taxpayer dollars to take people from these little towns and bring them into the cities. We saw this with VF Corp, that they had they were manufacturing, I think, socks in Steamboat. VF Corp gets a lot of economic dollars from the state of Colorado, and they bring those jobs to the Front Range. And so now you have government picking winners and losers. So now Steamboat, where that little company was, they don't have those jobs. So the economic development there has gone down. Well, you see politicians, PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, they pump their chest that, hey, we're creating all these jobs. The other thing about it, Steve, though, is you bring in these people, it puts pressure on housing prices, it puts pressure on schools, it puts more cars on the road. Congestion. So then they use that congestion excuse to try to push people into buses and trains and bikes. And so what you see is this public policy, as it starts to play out, it picks winners and losers. It picks a winner maybe in a metro area for some people, and then maybe the rural America, they end up losing jobs and the little towns die. So does that make sense?
It does. And it really, when you think it all the way through, it's a perversion of the normal processes that have been around for 100 years. But let's, I guess it needs to be said that this isn't just a problem for Colorado. This is a disease affecting local and state governments across the country.
It is. And as we talk about these numbers, it's important to understand that we are just talking about one program with the state of Colorado. You have counties and you have cities, municipalities, that are doing the same thing under the guise of economic development. And so the question then is, when these PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties are coming to you to ask you to give up your Tabor rights, your taxpayer bill of rights, so that they can have more access to your money, there's less transparency, There's less accountability, and the answer should be no. So again, no on Prop CC. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we will talk with Professor Victor Davis Hanson about a variety of issues, but also about his book, The Case for Trump. We'll be right back.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Butter Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we are having a conversation with Professor Victor Davis Hanson. He is one of the most important thinkers and voices in America today. As he's an author of many books, you see him all of the time on national TV. And we're going to talk with him about a book that he wrote in 2018, The Case for Trump, which it is a fascinating read. But before we do that, Professor Hanson, you live out in California in the Central Valley, correct?
Yes.
And then you work in the Bay Area at Stanford.
Yes.
Okay. You're with the Hoover Institute there. I saw a headline just recently that Pacific Gas and Electric is considering shutting down power to the Bay Area because of expected high winds. Of course, I think it was last year, there was the horrific fires that have been blamed on transmission lines with PG&E. But shutting down power for 7 days in a Bay Area, that seems like that's going to be very detrimental to a lot of people. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think what they intend is not the, downtown concrete mortar cities. What they're saying is the lateral lines or the subsidiary lines that go out into the California coastal foothills, which are pretty dry and windy, will be occasionally shut down during periods of high wind, and that's going to affect hundreds of thousands of people in Napa County, Mendocino County, Contra Costa County, the satellites around San Francisco. I don't think they're talking necessarily about places like Menlo Park or San Mateo. They're talking about the hills. But California is 40 million people now, so there's millions of people that live in these foothill, and they're usually high-end communities. It's a result of near bankruptcy that PG&E is in due to lawsuits over the last 3 or 4 years where we've had these brush fires that killed people. And part of the problem is that PG&E doesn't have the capital anymore or the organizational talent or the leadership to have updated its infrastructure. And that's because California's so-called green initiative mandates a particular percentage in wind and solar, and when everybody starts to do that on their roofs, then they essentially pay no PG&E bill, and then PG&E can't get enough money from them to upgrade the system that they're plugged into, and so then the rates go higher and higher on a smaller number of people. So then the question is, everybody wants to go solar, but they haven't figured out when that happens who's going to pay the and how much the monthly fee to keep the power generation lines open for everybody.
And
the result is they have no money.
That is so fascinating, because as we look at these issues on the show every day, we look at them as freedom versus force. And when you use the word mandate, that is another word for force. And it takes a while sometimes to see the ramifications of that force. But here with California moving, forcing people instead of letting a free market determine energy sources, forcing into solar, then not enough money to update these power lines, then you see the effects of that. So that's why when we look at these issues, each issue, freedom is always the better idea instead of force.
Yeah, it is, because it allows people, thousands of people on their own, to make individual judgments and play their particular talents rather than have a rigid orthodoxy that doesn't really draw on the collective wisdom of people. Everybody knows that, but California is in a crisis, and this is only one symptom of it, whether it's the homelessness or the high-speed rail or 46 in the nation in school test scores or 10 million people who came across the border illegally or one out of every four who was not born in the United States, legal or not. It is a victim of its own ideology. So what's happening now is people haven't quite made the last conclusion. In other words, they're saying, I don't want to live in San Francisco and see excrement and needles on the street. I don't want to live in downtown Los Angeles or work there. I don't want to pay this exorbitant amount of money for high-speed rail. It's dead. It's more than I don't want to have the highest gas taxes and the highest gas formulas in the country and pay more for my commute. I don't want to have the highest electricity rates. And I don't want to live in a state where we're not assimilating and integrating people from other countries, given one out of four is from another country. But they can't say to themselves yet, I voted for this. This is the logical result of my own naivete, and I don't want to do this anymore. They haven't gotten there yet. It has to get a little worse, and it will get worse. And then they're going to say, I can't even walk in Market Street in San Francisco anymore. This is crazy. Or I can't even drive from Gilroy to Palo Alto in the morning because we haven't updated the freeways in 40 years because we've diverted the money elsewhere. Or I can't go to Yosemite because I can't afford the gas. So that's coming, and it's tragic, but that's coming. And we all know what would be required to save the state. It would be to go back to the formulas that worked under Pete Wilson and George Dignation and Ronald Reagan, and that is lower the tax rate, deregulate the economy, allow more charter schools, vouchers, and close the border, and then in our schools teach the melting pot rather than the salad bowl, and deregulate especially gasoline and electricity use, and then allow President Trump just put 700,000 acres in the Coast Range up for fracking. It's very rich. California is the largest consumer of gasoline in the nation of all the 50 states, and yet we used to produce 70% of our own. We only produce 30, and we're one of Saudi Arabia's biggest importers of Saudi oil, and along with Alaskan oil. So we didn't cut back on our use. We just said we're going to make other countries produce the oil because we feel it's too dirty to produce here. And that's cost us a lot of money.
Well, and to that point, there was a recent Wall Street Journal piece by their editorial board that said that it's titled California's Foreign Oil Problem. It says, following the attacks on Saudi Arabia's oil facilities last month, many forecasters warned that gas prices would spike. Yet prices have hardly budged except in California, where they are surging due to policies that have made the state more reliant on foreign oil. It says gas prices in the Golden State have shot up 30 cents a gallon in the last few weeks amid problems at in-state refineries to a statewide average of $4.03 a gallon and may be headed higher. And so we're starting to see these policies. And this will probably be a good segue into Trump. But you are a historian, and now, one of the things, the American idea is the idea of federalism, that we would have these 50 different states and they would each be able to do a lot of things, differently. They could choose how to do different things. And it would be an experiment. So some states could have higher taxes than others, just a whole variety of things. And then if people didn't like what was going on in one state, they could, in a free market, they could move to another state where taxes might be lower. We're seeing that happen with people moving to Florida and to Texas. But then what we've seen with the federal government getting bigger and bigger is a state like California that's making a whole bunch of poor choices now goes to the federal government, and they want more money from people in South Dakota and Wyoming and Kansas to send their tax dollars to California because of those bad choices. And then I think we kind of, that segues into Trump, but what's your comment on that?
Well, California is of the medieval society's two classes. These are all 6 million people, mostly conservative, upper middle class entrepreneurs the last 30 years to places like Texas and Nevada, Wyoming, Idaho, etc. And they left because they felt that the highest gas, sales, and income tax in the nation didn't result in commensurate infrastructure or schools that were equally high, good, but they were rated bad enough they paid more than anybody else for such bad services. So that's what happened. But what was left was a very small elite, and it's the wealthiest elite, as I remember that, in the history of civilization, the market capitalization of Apple, Facebook, Google, and Yahoo, and Oracle is about $4 trillion. And when you add in these marquee universities on the coast, like Caltech or Stanford or Berkeley, and then you add in Hollywood and a lot of banking, California is a very wealthy state for very few people. We have wealthiest zip codes in the United States. We have the most billionaires, but there's no middle class. So what happens is the state passes all of these high taxes on income, and then we have about 150,000 people out of 40 million that pay half the income tax. And the people who couldn't afford to do that left, and the very, very wealthy don't really care because they have so much money that they're willing to pay for it. And then we have a huge underclass. One out of every three welfare recipients in the United States is in California.
Wow. And
more than a fifth of the population lives below the poverty level. The Attorney General just bragged that while most people would never admit it, he said we have 10 million illegal aliens living in California. We always knew that, but he bragged and was boasting about it. So the point I'm making is, you've got kind of a medieval lords and a castle and peasants everybody around it. And people keep saying, well, it can't go on. Well, it can't go on, but it can go on for longer because the people who are coming into California, if you live in Oaxaca, Mexico, or you live in Guatemala, whatever state California's in is 10 times better than what you left. And so I'm looking out the window from my farm, and I see a home. It used to be a family farm, and they left, and there's six or seven Winnebagos outside that are wrecked. There's a tent, there's porta-potties, and there's about an acre of about 30 people living there in Mexico. And they don't follow any of our rules in the sense that the dogs are not licensed, they're not vaccinated, the wiring, the plumbing is all illegal. But the state feels that that's a sanctuary home. They wouldn't dare make those people comply in the way they would U.S. citizens. But the point I'm making is, I've talked to them, and they feel this is heaven. People who've lived here a long time say this is a backward regression into the 1930s. But that's our problem. They're very, very wealthy people that have lived in lawless states and private jets, and they run these hugely profitable global companies, and then you've got very poor people. And the people in between are leaving because they feel that there's too high taxes and there's too poor services. The crime rate is going up, school test scores are going down, and they can't get that across to people. And so that's what's happening. And remember, the reason this is happening is because this is the most beautiful state in the United States. You've got Yosemite, you've got the Pacific 1,000-mile coastline. You've got Mount Whitney and Death Valley just 100 miles apart. You've got everything in the state.
Yeah.
Oil, gas, timber, mining. We're the fourth biggest producer, even in our debased state, of oil and gas. And you could be number one almost up to Texas or North Dakota easily.
Wow. And the climate. It's a beautiful state. But it's being run into the ground, but it is a beautiful state. Let's go to break, Professor Hansen. When we come back, let's talk about your book, The Case for Trump. Hey, before we go to break, we have Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, on the line. And hey, Jason, with all of these shutoffs, potential shutoffs of energy out in California, electricity in California, what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's fortunate, Kim, that it's happening out in California, where they already have a great homeless infrastructure. So a lot of the folks that don't have power, they could just go and live with the homeless who will be able to show them how to tough it out.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. More stuff on the streets. Okay. What about Pacific Gas and Electric? You know, it was interesting to me. They were the big bad bullies when, in fact, and it was tragic. I don't want to say it wasn't. It was so tragic, these fires. But now we fast forward to this year, and they're saying to prevent these fires, we're just going to shut down energy. Well, that really affects people's lives also. So what do you think about this?
Well, it sure does, and it's a huge mess. I know that Mr. Hansen mentioned, you know, everybody's moving to wind and moving to solar. You know, that's
by
maybe,
force too. It's being forced. Yeah,
right. And you know, that's affected Pacific Gas's bottom line to where, you know, maybe they can't upgrade the power lines the way they should have. But I gotta wonder, Kim, if you know, if it also isn't just tremendous amounts of red tape. We all know California's regulatory environment, and I don't know this for sure, but I would have to imagine if PG&E wants to change their power lines from one type to another, can you imagine what the approval process on that must look like out in the Republic of California?
Well, and you know, to that point, Jason, if they're trying to improve it, but it's not within the, you know, the approved kind of energy structure that the politicians, the bureaucrats, and interested parties have out there in California, then you could see them standing in the way to make that happen. So I think as you're unpacking this, you know, there may be public policy that was really one of the things that caused the fires out there last year as well.
You know, you're probably right, and I would imagine the bureaucrats and politicians will be making an apology for that soon, right?
I'm sure, but
taking some of the responsibility.
Well, and I doubt that, but you know, having affordable, reliable, and efficient energy is one of the most important things for everyday hardworking people to be able to go after their hopes and dreams. And we've seen public policy out in California. We're seeing it imported into Colorado. All of this, you know, virtue signaling on the proper energy sources and favoring one industry over another. We have Senate Bill 181 right here in Colorado that, you know, basically that was passed this last year that is trying to shut down the oil and gas business. And these bad decisions, you see them start to play out. And I think that's what's happening right now in California. Your thoughts, Jason?
Well, I think you're right with a lot of that, and you know, one lesson that can be learned from this is, you know, this is a repeated lesson, and it's dangerous to have too much of your money in just one stock, no matter what it is. You know, a utility would be considered to be a very, very safe stock.
Right.
But if you had your money in Pacific Gas and Electric, I mean, a big chunk, I mean, you've been hurt very badly. Back in November when this first happened, the stock was trading at about 49. And, Kim, within just a few days, it was down to 17. People don't tend to react that quickly. So, you know, at one point the stock got down to 5. Now it's at around $10. So holders in there have lost about 80% of their money. The company has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. They've got lawsuits coming out of their ears. So I think this speaks to making sure you're diversified and don't fall in love with one stock or one company, because any one stock or one company can have a problem like this and it could potentially go to zero.
Yeah, so that's, I think, really important advice, because you never know what the future is going to be. And I remember from my days back in the stock business that, yeah, we'd always look at utilities as, you know, like kind of those really solid stocks. But the other thing that's different now is that we have all of this regulatory stuff that can put these companies out of business or really, really hurt them. So to your point, it's important to diversify. And so that's one of the things, Jason, that you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management do is you will sit down and you will, you know, talk about an individual plan for each individual that fits their temperament, their comfort levels, so that they can sleep well at night. And there's no cost to do that. And if they're in a good spot, I know you say, hey, you're great. But if you can help people, I know that that's what you specialize in.
Well, thank you, Kim, very much. It's very smart to have a plan. I think a plan helps you to understand how much risk you need to take, and I've always kind of been a big believer in, don't take more risk than you have to in order to achieve your goals. Take as much as is required and put the rest to bed in something safe that takes care of the basics. There's no need to reach for the golden ring, especially in volatile and uncertain times like we have right now.
Well, that's for sure. So give Jason a call over at Presidential Wealth Management. Natalie will be at the board at 7:30. And so you can call after that. The phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Jason, thanks so much. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Have a great show, Kim.
Thanks so much.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Paladin, Paladin, where do you roam?
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we're having a conversation with Professor Victor Davis Hanson. He is one of the most important voices and important thinkers in America today. He's an author of many great books, as well as you see him all over the media. And Professor Hanson, it is just great to have you here.
Thank you.
Okay, let's talk about this book that was written in 2018, The Case for Trump. And it is a fascinating read. And why don't you go ahead and set it up for us? Because it's a very important book, I think, that people need to understand.
Well, my original title was Why Trump Won, and the publisher thought it wouldn't be edgy enough, but that's what the book is about. And it surveys the Republican primary of 2016. It explains why Trump calibrated some issues that most Republicans did not want to touch, such as illegal immigration, China, loss of manufacturing, or optional military engagements overseas that hadn't worked out too well. And those issues were geared to the states where the election would be decided: Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Ohio, North Carolina, Florida. And he won. And it was an expression of people who felt that they had been in between the coasts, neglected or despised or caricatured, and they had mixed up cause and effect, that people said, well, these people are dysfunctional, these deplorables, and therefore they drove industry out. And Trump came along and said, no, industry abandoned them, in globalized asymmetrical and unfair trade, and then pathologies, but we can restore that. And that resonated, and so he did the unthinkable. He was the first president without military or prior political experience to win the presidency, and he had a particular menu of things that have led to this month almost the lowest peacetime unemployment in our history at 3.5% unemployment. And then real workers' wages from 2017 alone have increased $5,000 per year. And that had not been true. They hadn't even raised any at all since 2008. So he's been very successful, and I think people feel that he represents a threat because he's not sober and judicious. He's not polished. He's confrontational. That's one reason that he got elected. His supporters felt that they needed chemotherapy to battle the cancer of the administrative state. But we'll see what happens. But right now, nobody denies that the economic agenda of Trump worked. And there's more controversy over foreign policy, but most people believe there were a lot of things that had to be done, get out of the crazy Paris Climate Accord or the Iran deal, or start talking to North Korea, or tell the NATO partners to pay their fair share. But nobody wanted to do that. It was considered too confrontational. So that's where we are, and he's got an array of enemies that want to abort his presidency in the way that they wanted to abort his campaign and abort his transition. We'll see what happens.
Well, and, you know, when Trump looks into the camera and says, they're not coming after me, they're coming after you, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, what he's referring to is the very words of what people have said. I mean, back in 2008, Barack Obama said the people of Pennsylvania who didn't vote for him cling to their guns and they were superstitious and prejudicial. Hillary Clinton called them deplorables and irredeemables. Joe Biden said they were the dregs of the earth. John McCain said Trump brought out the crazies. This one of the lawyers who's defending the whistleblowers from that firm that's defending the whistleblowers said yesterday that they were human excrement. So you just have to collate what people have said about them. And the idea was that under Obama, the white working class was done for. The middle of the country was ossified. It would never come back. The East and West Coasts were connected respectively to superior cultures in Europe and China. They were getting very wealthy with global markets of 7 billion people. And the middle of the country were Duck Dynasty, ice trucker, axemen type of dysfunctional people. Trump came along and said, these are the people who built the country, and they're not done yet. And everybody thought he was crazy, but they turned out in droves. And they did something no Republican had ever done since 1988. They won the so-called States of the Blue Wall. And that has terrified everybody since then, because the Democrats don't know quite what to do. Who should they nominate? Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders? They want to nominate either one of them, but they know in their head that they should nominate Joe Biden because he can fake it like he's a moderate. And the others can't, but in their hearts, they don't want to do that because after the Obama legacy, they've gone pretty hard left.
Well, you know, what is interesting is I think that Trump's message is resonating with a lot of people. We had recently found an article from the Seattle Times that said even in the bluest of blue, Seattle, that Trump has actually raised more money from more people than the top four Democrat candidates combined. And I think that that is making, you know, these elites shake in their boots. And that's why I think we're seeing all this craziness going on in Washington right now regarding the whistleblower. I personally don't think there's a real whistleblower. I think that this is all fabricated.
Yeah, I don't think if you define a whistleblower as somebody who comes forward, identifies himself and says, I saw this, I was in the room when this happened, and I followed the statute, then he's not a whistleblower, she's not. because the person is still anonymous. The person has, if you read the brief, it's second and third hand knowledge. And then it makes accusations about what Trump said in a call, which are not substantiated by the actual transcript of the call, at least what we have. And then more importantly, we know that mysteriously, just days before the whistleblower came forward, the statute was changed administratively by administrative people of the deep state. They said that you could file for the first time a whistleblower complaint without having firsthand knowledge. And then most importantly, the whistleblower was supposed to go to the Inspector General of the intelligence community. Instead, she first went to Adam Schiff's staff, and then of course Adam Schiff lied about that contact. So when you hear there's more whistleblowers, I think what we're really talking about is there's people within the administrative state that have access to the White House. They gossip to other people, and then the CIA or the FBI or the DIA, and these people then pick people to go to Democratic lawyers to write complaints. It reads just like the Mueller report. There's footnotes to ABC News and NPR. There's court cases that are cited as precedent. It doesn't look like a whistleblower's complaint. It's a polished legal document. And then they get a liberal progressive law firm to defend them, and they work in conjunction with Democratic members of the House, and that's what we're going to see from now on. And then the media does their part by saying the walls are closing in, this is a bombshell, we've reached a turning point. And they've got the script pretty well down from the Mueller investigation, and their whole point is to drive down his popularity by 5 to 7 points and to pick off Republican senators in the Senate for the impeachment vote. And I don't think they're going to get the 2/3, but their point right now, I think, is that they'll impeach him, and then they can get a majority vote, they hope, 51-49, people like Romney and Flip, and then they're going to say, well, you know what, it doesn't really matter, we didn't get 2/3, we got a majority, and the Constitution, like the Electoral College, is archaic, and we confirm judges now with 51%, so he should leave. And so that's the ultimate strategy, and whether people catch on to it or not, we'll see.
Yeah, you've really laid it out. That is the whole game on this whole thing. And of course, with Senator Romney's comments recently, I realized that there is danger in what you had just described there. So I tell you what, Professor Victor Davis Hanson, let's go to break. We have one more segment to continue to talk about your important book, The Case for Trump. This is Kim Munson, The Kim Munson Show. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You only have a few days left for 3 scary movies under the stars. The 88 Drive-In Theater will close for the season Thursday, October 24th. So get there now. Open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Thursday. See an independent film that takes place in a drive-in theater. 47 Hours, rated R, followed by Joker and Rambo Last Blood. Admission is only $9 per person and includes all 3 features. Get directions now at 88drivein.net.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and we are having a conversation with Professor Victor Davis Hanson. Absolutely a brilliant mind here in America and a very important voice. The book that we're talking about was written in 2018, The Case for Trump, and it really talks about how Trump won in 2016. We're now just a year out from the next election, or almost a year, and he has been under attack since the minute he took office. I can't believe that he's still standing sometimes, Professor Hansen.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that anything that hasn't destroyed Trump has made him stronger. But before he took office, there were 60 votes to impeach him, and that happened the first week. They introduced that, and then there was they being the Democratic Party, sued for voting machine fraud, which was found not to be true in three states. And then they said that they were going to invoke the Logan Act, which had never been used to convict anybody. And then they dropped that, and they said he had made money off his office, even though we know he lost $1 billion after his presidency. And so they sued him under the Emoluments Act, and then they tried to sue and stop all of his immigration orders in court. And then they said he was insane. They got a Yale psychiatrist to testify, Bandy Lee, and said that he was unhinged. She'd never, of course, met Donald Trump. No, so he took the Montreal Cognitive Assessment Test and did a perfect score on it. So they dropped that, and then they went into Stormy Daniels that he had illegally given a campaign contribution to himself by suggesting a non-disclosure form for her. Then they dropped that, and then Michael Avenatti appeared. And then there was the tax returns, and there was the 22-month, $32 million Mueller investigation, and that all came to nothing. And now we're into whistleblower 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. And then while all this was going on, there was a lot of peripheral psychodrama. There were the kids with a Covington red hat, and they supposedly symbolized Trump's racism, and poor Nathan Phillips and Native American was being harassed by them. And of course that blew up when we found out he had lied about his Vietnam service and that he had provoked the kids. And then suddenly 2 weeks later, there was Jussie Smollett, and he was supposedly walking around at 2 a.m. To get a sandwich in sub-freezing weather in a very liberal area of Chicago when two red-hatted Trump-supporting masked bandits were wandering around with bleach and nooses looking for somebody like Jussie Smollett, whom they insulted. They were apparently fans of his African-American serial show Empire, which I don't think white supremacists would watch. And then they attacked him, but they were heroically beaten off. And then that fell apart. And then, of course, we've had the Kavanaugh hearings. It was a surrogate for the Hate Trump show. So this goes on and on and on. And the question that everybody has is, one of two things have to happen. Either the American people say, you know what, Trump is so chaotic, he's so disrupting, I just wanted to go all the way and start over. Or these Democrats and progressives and leftists are trying to destroy the country, and I can't let them do that. And so that's what the 2020 election is going to be about.
That is fascinating. Where do you think, what do you think? What's your, if your finger in the wind, what do you think it's going to be?
Well, I think it's pretty well split, but I think from what we're looking at internal polling that the Republicans released today and these town halls that are going on with representatives home for 2 weeks in these swing districts and what the polls are, I would have thought that with all this negative publicity, Trump's polls would have dropped 10 points. But in the Real Clear Politics average, they've only gone down a point, and some polls have actually gone up. And so I think right now, after 3 weeks of this, they've done about as much damage as they're going to do, and I think there's going to be a reaction to it now that's slowly happening now. People are just saying, you know what, the guy is going to run for office in 13 months. Just wait. Don't put the country through this. Work on your job for which you were elected, and we'll decide in November of 2020. And, of course, I think it was Representative Al Green from Texas said,
the reason that we're impeaching Trump is if we wait till the election, he'll win the election. He was the most honest of all of the people involved.
Well, Professor Hansen, I have wondered about this whole impeachment Ukraine conversation with Trump when we really look at what had happened with Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden. And Hunter was serving on the board of a Ukrainian energy company, to my understanding, was making $50,000 a month doing that. And that, in fact, that may be where the real collusion is. But if that busy, you know, everyday hardworking person, you know, isn't totally watching this, you know, they've done the whole narrative on Trump when in essence it looks like it may be Biden, and that may, you know, may be uncovered. But I think then this whole narrative has been to confuse people.
Yeah, I think that's something that either Elizabeth Warren and the left of the party wanted to happen, but there was attention turned to Biden, or they didn't, the Democratic Party didn't think it would happen. But given the Biden family, Joe Biden's brother and son, and how they were completely unqualified in matters of oil and Ukraine in particular, and yet they made a lot of money both in Ukraine and China, suddenly, and they were given exemption, even though Joe Biden bragged on TV and the video how he had fixed that deal in Ukraine. The point is that they didn't anticipate that every time somebody said Trump in Ukraine, Biden's name came up. And the result of that is he's lost his 15-point lead. He's dead even now with Elizabeth Warren. And in the next debate, we're going to see what's going to happen. But in the fourth Democratic debate, you can bet somebody is a surrogate for Warren. It'll probably be Kamala Harris or Beto or somebody who wants to be vice president will take Biden out. And I think if he's not already taken out. So what they basically did, they blew up their leading candidate, who the polls said had the best chance of beating Donald Trump. And whether that was by design from the far left or it was a catastrophic blunder, nobody knows. But I don't think Joe Biden is a viable candidate right now, and that's a big win for Trump. And I don't know, if I was a Democratic strategist, I would have got together and I would have said, we've got to unite around the person who could win, and Biden has moved to the left, so you guys, let's compromise and support. That was all, where all the big Democratic money is. If Elizabeth Warren gets nominated, with her wealth tax and 90% income tax and AOCs, nobody should be allowed to be a billionaire rhetoric, I can tell you that people in Wall Street and Silicon Valley, the big money that raised three times the amount of Donald Trump's war chest in 2016 for Hillary Clinton, will not give a dime to Elizabeth Warren. That money will either go out on the sidelines or will go to Donald Trump. And that's what's terrifying the Democrats right now.
Do you think they bring back Hillary?
Well, they have two choices. It's either to lose with Elizabeth Warren or either to bring back Hillary or somebody like Michelle Obama that would wink and nod and say this is Barack's third term and be above everything. She'd be a senior statesperson. But I have a feeling Hillary senses an opening, that there's this, she's going to, and she will rebrand herself no longer as a hard left candidate, but the Hillary of 2008. Who ran to the right of Barack Obama. And this time she'll say that she's going to win the swing states. I don't think that's a viable, either one of those scenarios is viable, but that doesn't mean they won't be tried.
Okay. We have just a couple more minutes left, Professor Hansen. What is the final thing that you would like to leave with that everyday hardworking person out there that all they want to do is go after their American dream and take care of their family? What would you say to them?
Well, I would say they're still in the majority of the country, but they're fighting a cultural civil war because what they stand for, a nuclear family, hard work, follow the rules, affordable prices and homes and education. They're fighting the universities, the entertainment industry, Hollywood, the foundations, the media especially, and often really global corporations. And their message is contrary to the American message. It's let's have the wealthy run everything in anti-democratic fashion and then redistribute money from the middle class to the poor. And the fewer middle-class people, the better. They're too independent and loud. We don't like the Tea Party. We don't like the old parole voter. We don't like the Reagan Democrats. We don't like the deplorables. They prefer a class of mostly poor people dependent on government and then an elite that run everything. And so we're in a cultural war about that. You can see it in Colin Kaepernick and not wanting to stand up for the flag, or you can see, you know, the transgendered forced a different bathroom, or you can see all of the reparations or the new Green Deal, pretty much the Democratic agenda as exhibited in the debates. And none of those issues, whether it's Medicare for everybody or abolish all student debt or give illegal aliens complete health care coverage, polls 51%. And so I think the middle class is still a majority, but they're going to have to stand up and say, you know what, I'm not going to sign on for the destruction of the United States as I've known it. I'm just not going to do it. I'm not going to turn this country into the EU or something I see abroad. And there's a reason why people are coming to the United States illegally from all over the world. And we better just take a deep breath and understand that's because we're the best country and we don't want to become like people abroad who are leaving their countries. We want to remain exceptional. And if they keep that in mind, I think we'll be okay. But if they get demoralized or depressed and say, I just want to escape all this, then we're going to be in bad trouble.
Okay. Well, we stand on the shoulders of giants. We are Americans. And as Professor Hansen said, we need to stand up and make sure that we do our duty to pass something good on to the next generation. Professor Victor Davis Hansen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And our quote for today is from Professor Victor Davis Hansen. He says, history has shown that a government's redistribution of shrinking wealth in preference to a private sector's creation of new sources of it can prove more destructive than even the most deadly enemy. Today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want